Proverbs 27:6. Solomon says, "Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy." Deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. In Proverbs, Solomon makes what society would call a poignant statement. Now, what does that mean, a poignant statement? Something that evokes emotion, maybe sadness, maybe regret, about how friends treat one another. And the majority of people are going to disagree with the first part. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but they're going to agree with the second. But as Christians, we look at this verse as being a profound statement by Solomon. And we're going to study that first part out quite extensively here today, what that means. Perhaps as I was studying Proverbs 27:6, Matthew 26 came to your mind. When Jesus tells the crowd, Judas actually tells the crowd, "Whomever I kiss, he is the one sees him." Being careful of the deceitfulness of kisses of an enemy. So how does society tend to assign different definitions to the word friend? Because we see this quite often. One way that we see is we'll meet someone a few times. Maybe we'll meet them physically, or maybe in today's world we meet them virtually in social media. We might gain a couple of snippets of information from them, and we'll call them our friend. Probably a better term would be acquaintance. Another way we tend to call people friends is as neighbors. People who live close by us in a house or an apartment, we'll call them a neighbor. We may not know them all that well, but we'll call them a friend of ours. Oftentimes, our neighbors become friends. I had the great fortune of living in the same house for 18 years, from 1972 until 1990, when I met Valerie. Actually, I married Valerie in 1990. Met her before that. It was not that quick of a court. But we lived in the same house for 18 years in a little town of about 200 people. It was rare that anybody moved into or moved out of this town. And so many of us kids went to school together, K through 12, and we got to know one another. And we knew each other. We knew our brothers and sisters. We lived there long enough. We knew our parents. I knew their parents. Some of them I knew their grandparents. Some of them I knew their aunts and uncles. And after a while, you start picking up tendencies or characteristics of these individuals. And I think, and I'm sure there's some of you that have had that same and similar experience. Eventually, you can say that I know this person quite well. Okay, they are a friend of mine, or maybe maybe you know them well enough, you can say that they aren't a friend of yours, but you know them quite well. One of the biggest areas of how we determine friends is where we live, or where we work, or where we go to school. So some type of geographic location. And we may see people at school or at work, and based on that environment where we spend actually quite a bit of time with them, we'll pick up a few characteristics of them as well. And usually they're tied to education. For example, if I'm going to be an engineering student at U of I, I'm going to know a lot of engineering students. If I'm going to be an insurance agent, then I'm going to know a lot of other insurance agents. Okay, and so we kind of run in the same pack, right? And we understand some different things about ourselves, but usually it's within that realm right there. And sometimes we venture out beyond that and we start a little bit better relationship and more in depth. But for the most part, those types of friends that are classmates or coworkers, it's kind of limited in scope and how much we know about them. Now, I'm going to make a statement, and you may disagree with me, and that's fine. But I'm going to tell you, I think that that describes the Lord's church. And specifically, I think it describes local congregations. We'll meet together two or three times a week. If we decide not to show up on Sunday nights, then we're down to twice a week. And if we decide not to show up on Wednesday nights, now we're down to once a week. And really, in that time frame, we're really only down to just a few minutes, because we'll chat with one another before services. We'll chat with one another a little bit after services. And that's going to be the extent of our conversation for that week. And in that short period of time, we need to find out who each other, who we are, and get to know one another as well as we can. And we'll do things, there's other things. There was a devotion last night, I believe. Sorry I didn't go. There's potlucks. There's times that we have Bible studies with one another. We help one another with class material. Or we just simply just call one another up and ask how you're doing. So there are other things that we do to become friends with one another. But I think by and large, and I'm not being critical, but I think by and large, most of the time we're spending with one another is here. 2 to 3 times a week. So, just my own thoughts, and this wasn't researched or looked up anywhere, I believe that how we define our friends is based upon our geographic location, a virtual location, common traits such as work, education, or hobbies, or some other cause that we share with one another. But it does seem to be human nature that we want companionship. A lot of us are married. We sought out a spouse, and they said yes. And we get married, and we develop a good relationship with that spouse. But, you know, beyond that, many of you have companions. You have someone of the same gender. A male has a good friend that's another male, or a female has a good friend that's another female. And you spend some time with them, and you get to know who they are. And we kind of, it's human nature that we want to see those things. We want to have those things. There are people who can we can confide in. We can enjoy their company. But we can even share our fears and successes with that individual. But I want to give a quote here about a well-known preacher, a quote that he said regarding friendship and companionship. He says, "Friendship is more than just social calls or the sharing of meals and enjoying each other's companionship. It is caring enough to do whatever needs to be done, regardless how utterly distasteful the task may be." This well-known preacher goes on to talk about, or ask a question about our neighbors, and why we wouldn't reason with our neighbors about their greatest need, the salvation of their souls. Instead, he says, we keep quiet and let them go undisturbed to hell. Now, it might sound a little harsh, but his point is clear. More than anything, we need to seek out someone who's willing to tell us no when we want to stray toward temptations that will pull us away from Jesus. We want to seek out someone who will pray for us when we're spiritually weak, and someone who will encourage us to be a better Christian today than we were yesterday. The Proverbs 27 friend. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Remember Nathan's comment to David in 2 Samuel 12? Sounds like they may have just studied this here recently. I know we had. His comment to David, remember he has this analogy where David becomes angry because this rich man had stolen from a poor man to feed this traveler. And Nathan reminds him, "You are that man," shouting this out to David. And this is, of course, the analogy about David stealing Bathsheba from Uriah and then planning and scheming to have Uriah killed, which it does happen. So what's David's response in verse 13 of 2 Samuel 12? "I have sinned against the Lord." Now, David could have said a lot of things here in this case. Maybe a lot of things have popped into your mind at this time. When we get accusatory towards someone, what tends to happen? Things that David didn't do. He didn't criticize or ridicule Nathan. He didn't plot against him as revenge for what he had said. He was a pretty good plotter. We know that in the killing of Uriah. But, you know, you look at this statement by Nathan, who was sent by God, and it's really not even an accusation toward David. This isn't an opinion by Nathan that this is what had happened. This is truly, in fact, what had happened. A true statement that David just simply cannot ignore. An indictment against David that really he should have been aware of all along. But I think we see the friendship, or at least the fellowship or relationship between Nathan and David and what happens when truth is said. In the New Testament, friend or neighbor is described as someone who is an associate, someone who is a partner, or someone we have things in common with. And I don't mean to minimize what the word friend means in the New Testament. I simply just am telling you what I've seen and researched here, that this is what a friend or a neighbor means in the New Testament. But let's look at some of the verses here about Jesus and see how this refers to him and how he refers to others as a friend. If you look over in Luke 7, back to where Byron had us this morning in our adult class, Luke 7. I will say one thing about Byron's class this morning, the analogy or the parable that was discussed, because I'm going to mention some of the same things here in Luke 7 just a little bit earlier on in this chapter. That the woman here in verse 37 is referred to as a sinner. And let's not negate or lose the fact that we are sinners in this world. But before we get to that, and if we look at Luke 7, verse 34, Jesus is accused of doing something. And it says in verse 34, "The Son of Man has come eating and drinking, and you say, 'Behold, a gluttonous man and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners.' Yet wisdom is vindicated by all her children." So in that verse 34, he's being accused of associating with people that he shouldn't have been associating with, tax collectors and sinners. And in this verse, the term here means to be friendly with someone, to wish them well. And we know that's true. Because when you think of the circumstances and you think of the purpose in which Jesus had come to this earth, we can look at that and say yes. He was friendly with those who were sinners. Thankfully, right? Thankfully. How do we know this? Well, we can look in Luke 19. And we can see what his intentions were whenever we see the story about Zacchaeus. In Luke 19:10, it says, "For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost." Seek and to save that which was lost. And what does, who is Zacchaeus? How is Zacchaeus described in that passage? As a tax collector and as a sinner. The same people that Jesus is accused of eating with. In Matthew 26:50, we see another used a different way when discussing his enemies. In this case, Judas, where he calls even his enemies friends. In Matthew 26:50, it says, "And Jesus said to him, 'Friend, do what you have come for.' Then they came and laid hands on Jesus and seized him." And in this case, it's a little bit more intimate, this word friend. It's referring to a comrade or a good friend. And we may think, well, that's unusual. Why would he call a so-called enemy a friend, someone that is dear to him? We see something similar to that with the Jews when they remind Pilate that if you don't release Barabbas and keep Jesus, that you're no longer a friend of Caesar's. In other words, you're no longer loyal to his interests. If we look at James 2 and 23, another situation here with Abraham. And the term friend being used here as well. With James explaining the interconnecting attributes of faith and works, he tells of the faith of Abraham in verses 20 through 23. He says, "But are you willing to recognize, you foolish fellow, that faith without works is useless? Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered up Isaac, his son, on the altar? You see that faith was working with his works. And as a result of the works, faith was perfected. And the scripture was fulfilled, which says, 'And Abraham believed God, and it was reckoned him as righteousness.' And he was called the friend of God." We look at how he's called a friend of God in this verse here. It still means it's someone who's an associate or they have something in common. But there's a close relationship between Abraham and God. So close that Abraham believes that Isaac will in fact be resurrected when he takes the knife and is getting ready to sacrifice him. I don't believe Abraham had any idea that that knife was up there and that an angel of the Lord was going to grab his hand. But he believed God enough that Isaac would be spared. So John 13, 34 and 35 that Toby had read here earlier. And let's reread those again. John 13, 34 and 35. And we're not really talking about the greatest commandment here, but what this can do for us and the world that's around about us. John 13, 34. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. And it is verse 35 that we want to focus on. Our friendship and our love for one another is going to send a strong message to the world as to our love for Jesus Christ. And when I say our, I'm talking about those of us here are Christians who are brothers and sisters in Christ who have put on Christ in baptism. When we have the friendship and the love for one another, it will send the right message to those who are still seeking. It shows others we are his disciple, as Jesus mentions here in John. I'm going to give just a short example of this that I experienced here a few years ago in this very congregation. And I would assume that as I give you this example, that you probably experienced some of the same things. We'd probably been here about 3 or 4 years already, maybe 4 or 5. We've been here 11 years, maybe it was 5 or 6 years ago. And I would stand back there in the vestibule, that common area about where, right there behind Kim and people, as people come and go. And this woman who is a little bit younger than me, all of a sudden started coming in and saying hello to me. I thought, okay, well, that's nice. A little confused. Sometimes I realize I'm not the easiest to approach of an individual. So I thought, why is she saying hello to me? And then she kept doing this, and I thought, okay, well, now instead of being confused, I'm starting to get a little annoyed, a little bit irritable that she would talk to me, because what did I have to do back? Well, I was going to have to say hello back. She was forcing something out of me. So reluctantly, I would say hello to her, and this went on for a while, and I don't know how long. Could have been a month, could have been 2 months. And the longer it went on, I realized that it was easy to say hello to her. And I can tell you now, today, 5 or 6 years later, whatever it is, I would have no problem going up to this individual and having an in-depth discussion, spiritually speaking, about family, about friends, whatever the case might be. I had nothing to do with that. That was this individual who just simply wanted to be a friend, I assume, and sought me out and said hello to me enough times that eventually she wore me down and I said hello back. I am grateful for that friendship. And I believe that even though this doesn't send a strong message to the world, it sends a strong message to me that she is a disciple of Jesus Christ. We could go on and on. This actually isn't going to be a very long lesson. We could go on and on about the friendship. We aren't even going to touch Proverbs other than Proverbs 27. But Solomon has a great deal to say about friendship. But let's look at a few more examples about the teachings of Jesus when it comes to being a friend. In Mark 12, 28, if you would turn there. Again, being asked about the greatest commandment, what was Jesus' response here? He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and your strength. But that the second is just like it, to love your neighbor as yourself. And this is an emphasis of the importance of serving God and serving others. On the Sermon on the Mount over in Matthew 5, Jesus tells the people here something a little similar, but a little more in depth, about who to love. They know in Matthew 5, here it says, you have heard that it was said you should love your neighbor and hate your enemy. And we have heard that as well, right? We understand that. But here Jesus takes it one step further about the enemy when he says in 44, but I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. So not only loving our neighbor and our friend, because that's easy, but also loving and praying for the very people who persecute us. Paul makes some statements about friendship as well over in Romans 13, beginning in verse 8. Romans 13, beginning in verse 8. This is what we would call a comparative statement. A comparative statement is that not but statement. Not this, but this. Don't do this, but do that. And we see that here in Romans 13. If we start in verse 8, it says, "Owe nothing to anyone except to love one another. For he who loves his neighbor has fulfilled the law." Speaking of this, what Paul is telling us is, don't owe anybody anything except for love. Don't do this, but do this. And for how long are we to love one another? Well, it's perpetual. It doesn't end until the law has been fulfilled. What law? Well, the law we were talking about earlier. Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, all thy soul, all thy mind, and all thy strength. And the second one being just like it, to love your neighbor as yourself. It's part of that law that Paul is talking about. He goes on in verse 9, he says, "For this you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and if there is any other commandment, it is summed up in this saying, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." And you'll probably recognize those commandments as being those commandments that are talking about our relationship with one another rather than our relationship with God. He goes on in verse 10, he says, "Love does no wrong to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfillment of the law," this law we had just spoke of. So I am thankful. I am thankful that years ago, a Christian decided to eat with me, a sinner. That her mom and dad decided to eat with me, a sinner. I am thankful that a Christian thought it was important enough to continue asking me multiple times for a Bible study to find out who this person was. Jesus Christ is. And I am thankful that there are many Christians through my life who had a willingness to fellowship with me, to be a friend to me, a sinner. We need to take the characteristics that we see in Jesus Christ and make sure we're applying those to our lives, and that we are continuing to seek out the lost. It'll be Jesus Christ who'll do the saving. He came to seek and save the lost. We can also seek and allow him to save the lost. Why not be a disciple of Jesus Christ? Why not do that? Why not follow his example? If you're not a Christian and you're here today, reach out to someone who is. Allow them to seek you. Allow them to teach you about Jesus. The Holy Scriptures. How could it possibly hurt? You gain a friend, you gain some knowledge about Jesus, you can make your own decision about what to do next. If you're a Christian and you're here today, why not seek out someone who isn't? Just like Jesus did. Explain the plan of salvation to them. Why not? What could it possibly hurt? We gain a friend. Give them some knowledge about Jesus Christ. They can make their own decision. As the Ethiopian eunuch said when Philip came upon him studying the book of Isaiah, Philip asked him, "Do you understand what you're studying?" And the eunuch says, "Well, how could I unless someone guides me?" Let's guide someone. Let's influence their lives in a positive way. Let's be their friend. Let's gain a friend. And let's do what Jesus has done. Allow that example to live in us. If you have a need and you're here today, there's no better time than the present. There's a lot of people who would pray for you today and it would help you and assist you. Come forward as we stand and as we sing.